From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Glaciers, water, and geological activity shaped New York City's landscape long before the buildings and pavement did. We thought we might take the long view today and find out what's happened in the five boroughs over the past few billion years or so. And with me now is Sidney Horenstein, geologist and environmental educator emeritus at the American Museum of Natural History. He also leads geology tours throughout the city. Very pleased to welcome him to my show. Hello.
Thank you.
How much does New York City's geology vary around the five boroughs?
Well, quite a bit. New York City has the most complex geology of any city in the United States. What geologists like to call geological provinces, New York City sits on three different geological provinces. Each one of them have a different type, different suite of rocks. And in addition to that, the New York City was glaciated. And most of the city was covered by glaciers.
So are there certain things that are connected? Was Manhattan attached to Long Island and the Bronx separate and Staten Island separate again?
Sure. I'm
saying that because I know the East River is an inlet, so I'm assuming that Manhattan and,
well, it's a
and
tidal
Long Island
strait,
were once attached.
Right. It's all salt water moving back and forth by the tides. The Bronx and the western part of New York City, the Bronx, east western part of Bronx, Manhattan, and the northernmost part of Staten Island have similar geology. And then southern part of Staten Island and Queens and Brooklyn are covered by coastal plain deposits, loose sands and gravels that are 125 million years or younger. The oldest rock in New York City is the Fordham Gneiss, which is mostly exposed in the Bronx, and that's 1.1 billion years old.
And that, wasn't that once the foothills of a mountain range that went all the way up?
New York City, it was a mountain range, perhaps elevation of 14 to 16,000 feet high. And since it was formed 450 million years ago and rejuvenated several times, today when we walk, for example, in Central Park or in the Bronx on the bedrock, you're walking on the roots of those, that once great mountain range.
So when did the city's geology kind of become what it is today?
The city became, it's a long history. It went through many periods of mountain building, erosion, and but the city's shape, the shape of the city, the shape of the boroughs, all took place about 6,500 years ago.
Wow.
When the glaciers reached their approximate present positions and sea level reached its approximate present position, and so that the city got its shape that at that time.
Wasn't there a quarry business as close as Tuckahoe?
Oh, in Tuckahoe, sure. But also, there are many quarries in New York City. For example, the Customs House on Wall Street. That was marble that was taken from a quarry in the Bronx, just on the Bronx side of the Third Avenue Bridge.
So that's pretty high quality marble.
Oh, yeah, very much so. And not only was it used in New York City, but it was used in places. It was shipped to various places in the United States. I think the New Orleans City Hall is made of Tuckahoe marble.
So does that mean that there's still a lot of marble that's just been covered over by pavement and
sure.
housing and the like?
That's exactly right.
Were you surprised by the huge boulder that was excavated in Fort Greene, Brooklyn, just a few months ago?
No, but I was happy that people got all excited about rocks. This is typical kind of glacial deposits, and the glaciers act as a plow and a sled and sandpaper, and it pushes all the stuff in front of it and incorporated, and it's all incorporated within the ice. And then when it melts, it leaves these rocks that it's picked up on its travel. And of course, so I was delighted that people are interested in rocks, but also shows how divorced we are from the natural environment.
Well, where would that rock have been plowed from?
Well, that rock happens to be the Ravenswood granodiorite, which is still exposed in parts of the Queens. There's one place on 36th Avenue and 10th Street in Queens, near the East River, several localities there. But for the most part, it's all covered over.
And do we have any idea how old that boulder is?
I think it could be as old as 560 million years old, the rock itself. And of course,
why did it remain undisturbed for so long?
Well, it's there. You know, the glaciers melted away and left this veneer of material that it carried on the surface, and now it's all paved over. And so now when they're excavating the sewer line, they said, oh, my God, there's a big boulder. Let's take it out. But it got a little bigger than they thought. But not only was that one big boulder, but there were lots of others. And I went down there to look at it, and I whacked off a piece of the rock for my collection, which I have here. And it's a really lovely-looking rock, actually. So that's all under the surface. So the thing is to look at excavations, and you can see this material.
And what does it look like? It's a gray rock.
Grayish rock, and it has lots of minerals in it that you can clearly see. It all sparkles. All the crystal surfaces all reflect light, and there's mica and quartz and hornblende of constituent minerals that make up the rock.
And where would they have come from?
Well, this came probably from Queens.
So Queens moved to Brooklyn.
And from Queens to Brooklyn,
And it took glaciers to move it. It takes just heavy moving equipment. But
right.
I'd imagine that it was much more difficult 200 or 300 years ago.
Two or 300 years ago was much more difficult. But by the time Central Park was created, they were able to move those boulders. And in Central Park, you can see lots of these rocks. By the way, they're called glacial erratics. The word erratic means to wander. And so these rocks were, wandered under the agency of the glaciers. And so Olmsted and Vaux, when they saved these rocks and placed them in very strategic places in Central Park for a visual effect. They're sculpture pieces.
They took them from 57th Street, didn't they? That's what I've heard.
They were in Central Park. I mean, see, the thing is that it was all covered with all these boulders of all different sizes. All you have to do is remember Frost's poem, Mending Walls, and to think about New England. We have the same terrain as New England, full of boulders. People there made walls. But in Central Park, they took them away, or they packed them against the side of the avenues and hit them.
My guest is Sidney Horenstein, geologist and environmental educator emeritus at the American Museum of Natural History. Did the builders of the subways have to plan their routes with geological formations in mind, or did they just blast through rocks of the sort that we found in Brooklyn?
Each rock has its own different physical properties, and so they had to be aware of the geology. That's why you see occasionally cores being taken along potential construction sites. They did that when they built the subways because geology was advanced by the time they start building the subways in the turn of the century. And So sure, and you know, and working in New York City, engineers have to be very aware of the great variety of rock types that are here. You know the old joke about the rocks. The Bronx is nice, but Manhattan's full of schist, and the people who live in Inwood have all their marbles. So that tells you that's the geologic story of New York City.
And what is schist?
Schist is a rock that was once formed as mud in the deep sea. It was subjected to a tremendous amount of heat and pressure and recrystallized as continents collided into this new rock called schist.
So how much tectonic activity has happened in New York? Are there any fault lines in the fibers?
Oh, sure. The most famous one, of course, is the 125th Street fault that starts in the Palisades, cuts diagonally across the Hudson River through the Manhattanville Valley at 125th Street. That's why the IRT comes out of the ground, and then cuts across the northeast corner of Central Park, and then just below Gracie Mansion, you know, and then causes Roosevelt Island to end abruptly, and Hallett's Point in Queens to stick out, and continues into Queens. So it's a really dramatic one.
And the reason they ran the L at 125th Street is because they didn't want it to be in the ground where there might be earthquakes?
Well, I don't think that wasn't the consideration. The consideration was that to go down, they had to go down below, you know, the train would have to go, take a very steep dip below the ground. And the bedrock there underneath 125th Street is about 200 feet below the surface and filled in with glacial and post-glacial deposits. And so the engineering of it would have, you know, was very wet. It would have been very difficult to do. So the best thing to do was to bridge over it.
We were taught in school that the reason there are skyscrapers in downtown Manhattan and midtown Manhattan is because the bedrock is closer to the surface there.
Oh, yes, right. In lower Manhattan, it's much very close to the surface. And, in fact, if you read about the old descriptions of the lower tip of Manhattan, they talk about the rocky outcrops at the tip of Manhattan. And then, of course, as you go northward past Canal Street, it really starts to dip down maybe 250 feet below the surface and then comes back up on the west side at 34th Street.
And what is happening between Canal Street and 34th Street?
Well, it's all covered with, filled in with loose sands and gravels that were deposited by the glaciers and after the glaciers.
And, of course, when humans, well, not when humans, the Native Americans were here, but when Europeans came here, the Dutch especially, they also started doing landfills very early, didn't they? Like there wasn't enough land?
Oh, sure. They filled in. They knocked down hills. One of the ways to really recognize, if you look across to Brooklyn Heights and see the nice hill up there, well, don't forget there were hills that high in lower Manhattan. And they would just shave down and use to fill in. One of the places that they filled in was the Collect Pond. After it became so polluted after 1800, they just cut down those hills and made the streets as flat as possible. One of the reasons for that, or two of the reasons for that, was to make the streets as flat as possible to make it easier for horses to travel. They didn't have to go up and down hills, and also to fill in the low places in the terrain because they thought that's where diseases emanated from. And by filling in these wet, marshy areas, they thought they would eliminate diseases.
Well, they didn't eliminate diseases, but they probably did make it a little safer.
Well, they did make it safer. And of course, they also made Manhattan. I think lower Manhattan's expanded about 30%. Because of landfill.
On the other hand, we have the highest point, I'm not sure if it's in the city or at least in Manhattan, at Inwood. Is that higher than Park Slope in Brooklyn?
Oh, yeah. The highest place in Manhattan is 276 feet at Bennett Park. That's where Fort Washington was located, the Revolutionary War fort that fell to the British at the beginning of the war.
My guest is Sidney Horenstein, geologist and environmental educator emeritus at the American Museum of Natural History, who also leads geology tours throughout the city. And we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Sidney Horenstein, geologist and environmental educator emeritus at the American Museum of Natural History, and we're talking about what New York was like before we started messing it up. There are parts of Brooklyn and Queens that were very rich farmland, Staten Island as well. What made that soil so fertile?
Well, the soil came from glacial deposits.
Those glacial deposits did everything, didn't
they? Oh, yeah, because all of New York City's veneered with it. The glaciers in New York City ran from, Forest. So look, if you look at the names of the communities, Forest Hills, Jackson Heights,
Richmond
Bay Ridge, that's the line that represents what geologists call the terminal moraine. That's a deposit left at the front of the glacier. And it went across Brooklyn, Queens and Brooklyn, across the Narrows, and that's why the Narrows is narrow, and then for another major reason, and then across, down through Staten Island. In fact, at the southern tip of Staten Island, where the Conference Park is located, That is where the only place left that you can actually see the terminal moraine very clearly, and lovely looking out on Raritan Bay there.
And you said there was another major reason the Narrows are narrow?
Yes. And why the Narrows exist, and that is that the terminal moraine acted as a dam. And so when the glaciers reached its maximum extent came into this area about 21,000 years ago, and by 18,000 years ago began to melt away. And as it melted, all of the low places in the New York City terrain were filled with a freshwater lake, held back by the terminal moraine. And then as it continued to melt, this lake became perhaps 150 feet deep in places, the Hackensack Meadowlands, the Hudson River, Long Island Sound, the East River, the Hudson River, all filled with a freshwater lake. And as the ice continued to melt, then a major event occurred as it continued to melt back, and that is the exposure of the newly formed Great Lakes. And for a short period of time, the Great Lakes flowed down the Mohawk River, down the Hudson River, caused the lake to fill up, and where did it overflow? It overflowed the dam at the Narrows and washed it away. And that's why the Narrows is narrow. And then you have this tremendous, almost biblical-style flood running down the exposed coastal plain to the shore, which is probably about 60 or 80 miles off the present coastline. A very dramatic event.
And how did the Hudson River form out of all of that?
How did the river form? Well, the river gets all its headwaters from the Adirondacks and...
But it's a wide river, but it's not that wide. It's not a lake or anything.
The river got wide because the glaciers previously came down and excavated the valley. And in fact, the Hudson River is the southernmost glacial fjord in North America.
What would have happened to the brooks and all of the underground streams that occurred throughout the city?
They got filled in.
I know every once in a while I see some water leaking in the subway, and I assume that that's from a natural cause.
Yeah, that's groundwater, and it's, it rains, water seeps down into the ground through cracks in the pavement, through all the parks. It then moves subsurface, and then there are plenty of wells all through New York City which actually tap that water. In fact, there are some communities in Queens still get some of their water from wells. So there's an infiltration of rainwater, and that's where groundwater comes from. Well water comes from directly from rain that soaks into the ground.
This listener wants to know, got an email from a listener who wants to know how the serpentine that's found in Staten Island was formed, and is it anywhere else in the five boroughs?
Okay. The serpentine rock is serpentinite is the rock type. It formed Staten Island, in fact, and that forms the highest place in New York City, which is about 428 feet above sea level. Another place in New York City where you can no longer see it is if you go down 57th Street going westward towards 9th Avenue, the land rises up slightly. That hill, the old name for that was San Juan Hill, that is a mass of serpentine rock. And there are these pods of it going all the way up into New England. And what that is originally is as the continents collided, pieces of the ocean floor that was adjacent to ancestral North America were ripped up in small sections and heated up and recrystallized by the pressure and forming the serpentine rock.
What about the lime there's a lime bed on Broadway? Wants to know, she thinks that it's eroded and that's why you walk downhill on Broadway.
Well, if you're talking about 181st Street, mm-hmm. going northward, sure, you have Fort George Hill on the east and Fort Washington Hill on the west and a beautiful valley that runs down to Nagel Avenue in the Inwood section, and that is marble. That's the Inwood marble. And the best exposures of the Inwood marble are on Isham Street, just one block north of 207th Street, Manhattan.
There seem to be more rock formations in the northern part of Manhattan. Well, and the Bronx, seems to be all made out of rock.
You can see them. Look how New York City's northern Manhattan is so endowed with wonderful parks. Fort Tryon Park, Inwood Hill Park, Highbridge Park. Then you go into the Bronx and you have Crotona Park and Van Cortlandt Park and, of course, Pelham Bay Park. Those are the places that you can see the rocks. Everywhere else, almost, they're covered over.
There's Rat Rock at Columbia University.
And there's, that's right.
But not in Prospect Park in Brooklyn.
All glacial. The hills in Prospect Park is due to the terminal moraine. In Brooklyn, that's a big pile of boulders that left behind by the glaciers.
My guest is Sidney Horenstein, a geologist and environmental educator emeritus at the American Museum of Natural History. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. How many fossils have turned up in New York City?
Very few.
Any idea why?
Sure, because New York City's rocks are all rocks that have been heated up and recrystallized. So any fossils that had been in the rocks originally have been destroyed by that process. But you have to get into the much younger rocks. And so almost every borough, I think every borough has had a part of a mastodon found. Baisley Pond in Queens, in northern Manhattan, several sites of mastodon skeletons, Staten Island also, and the oldest fossils actually are found on Staten Island, which were brought by the glaciers from the Catskills,
imported the fossils.
Those are imported, right? Of course, we have lots of other imported fossils that are found in lobbies of buildings also.
Because the stone was cut and the fossils are inside them.
Right.
Well, they just came up with a major dinosaur fossil in Spain.
Right.
And there have been fewer fossils turned up in Europe, partly because it's been built up for so long. But mastodons are fairly recent. We're not coming up with dinosaurs here, even though we know they were.
Not in New York City, because there were no rocks of that age. If those rocks probably existed in New York City, but have been eroded away, so they don't exist. But if you go to New Jersey, There are several sites where you can find dinosaur footprints. And then just about half a mile south of the George Washington Bridge, in the sedimentary layers below the Palisades, they found a lovely phytosaur, which is sort of an alligator-like animal. And it's on display at the American Museum on the fourth floor, that particular one. So that's the closest in-place oldest fossil. I like to call him Father Knickerbocker.
Do geologists see things differently than the rest of us do when they walk around the city?
Sure, because you're thinking about the landscape that was here, perhaps what was going to happen in the future. You walk down any street in New York City and look at the geology all around you.
Even though it's covered by pavement?
In the pavement. Everything comes from either the earth or from living things. That's it. And so cement, concrete, building stones, all iron framing, it's all from the earth. That's all geology. Geology is everywhere underfoot.
So where do you take the people you walk around with on your tours of New York City?
I have favorite parks. As I mentioned before, Inwood Park, Inwood Hill Park.
What do you see in Inwood then? I like Inwood, but it's what I think about Inwood is that there's a great museum there.
The Nature Center, yes.
Oh, no, I meant Fort Tryon, which is
right
nearby.
Oh, Fort Tryon.
Right.
Oh, yeah, sure. In fact, the building there, the Cloisters building, that's a granite that came from New London, Connecticut.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought that they took it rock by rock from Europe.
Well, the chapel houses, the cloisters inside, but the exterior building is a new building with fresh stone from New London. And but the bedrock there is exposed, and you can see the schist very clearly, and lots of other features. You see glacial potholes. Not only in Fort Tryon Park, but also in Inwood Hill Park.
What about the Bronx? We said that it was part of a mountain range at one time. Is it pretty consistent? Those hills that we have to walk up and down?
Because you have a variety of different kinds of schist that are there. Mica schist, garnetiferous schist, hornblende schist, a variety of gneisses.
What are gneisses?
That's a banded rock that has light and dark bands in them.
Does that come from lava flow?
Some of it could be. All these rocks were once had a parent. They're all the bedrock of New York City all came from something else and was recrystallized, heated up by heat, and changed by heat and pressure.
And you can reveal all of that when you're walking around with people
sure.
on a tour.
Yeah, make great stories. You know the story about the film The Naked City. There are 8 million stories. Well, then if you talk about the rocks, you have to add a couple of million more.
We have a slideshow of some geologic points of interest around New York City. It's on our show page at wnyc.org. Sydney, if people wanted to take a tour of New York City's geology with you, what should they do?
Well, the basic tours I take are for members of the American Museum of Natural History, and I hope everybody joins and comes on our tours. I have some coming up in beginning of March in Central Park, and then the dates are not set, but Manhattan Park's North. They're on the you can find them on the web. The date's not set, but I'll do a series of trips for them, for the Parks Department in Highbridge Park, Fort Tryon Park, and Inwood Hill Park.
Before you go, could you tell us a little bit about Canal Street? A couple of listeners have called in. Now, obviously, Canal Street, if there was a canal, right. that was made by humans. But was that a good place to build a canal?
Sure. Well, they needed to do that. Well, the thing that you have to remember that there was a vast marshland on the west side called the Lispinard Marshes.
There's just a street called Lispinard.
And there's a street named after Mr. Lispinard, right? And then where we are here, and to the north was this vast lake called the Collette, or the Collette Pond.
So that's where Chinatown is now?
Sorry?
That's where Chinatown is?
In Chinatown, but right in Foley Square. Mm-hmm. And that became a little polluted with time, as many of the lakes have. And so they needed to drain it. And the canal is the way they figured out how to drain it going to the west. And they created an actual canal. And then there are a couple of bridges, the Kissing Bridge, which went over the canal at Broadway. And then eventually it was sewerized. And so you see very little of it. But if you walk around here, you can see, like when you walk down Elk Street from Chambers, you see you're walking down slope. And a few places, you still can see the ghosts of where this lake was.
And the canal just was all filled in, or you say made into sewers. Right. And that went up to Center Street, did it? Or did it continue across to where Canal Street continues to the east?
Well,
side?
And it continued along Canal Street, yes.
Well, when next time I walk around the city, I will see it quite differently than I have in the past. Wow. And I hope to go on one of your tours. Just get in touch
invited.
With the American Museum of Natural History.
Right.
Sidney Horenstein is geologist and environmental educator emeritus at the American Museum of Natural History, also heads geology tours throughout the city, and I want to thank him so much for being with us today.
And thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.